This is 6 of 7, Part B of a Child Guidance Series by Frank Phillips. Feel free to copy and share with others.
I'd like to read from this Testimony Treasures. Now, another couple of things on this, right on the power of appetite. The work of temperance must begin in our families, at our tables. Mothers have an important work to do that they may give to the world through correct discipline and education, children who will be capable of filling almost any position and who can also honor and enjoy the duties of domestic life. The work of the mother is very important and sacred. She should teach her children from the cradle to practice habits of self-denial and self-control. If her time is mostly occupied with the follies of this degenerate age of dress and so on, take up her time, she won't be doing her duty. The anxiety of the Christian mother should not be in regard to the external merely, but that her children may have healthy constitutions and good morals. Now, this is the part that I think is tremendous. Many mothers who deplore the intemperance which exists everywhere do not look deep enough to see the cause. They are daily preparing a variety of dishes and highly seasoned food which tempt the appetite and encourage overeating. The tables of our American people are generally prepared in a manner to make drunkards. Appetite is the ruling principle with a large class. Whoever will indulge appetite in eating too often and food not of a healthful quality is weakening his power to resist the clamors of appetite and passion in other respects in proportion as he has strengthened the propensity to incorrect habits of eating. Mothers need to be impressed with their obligation to God and to the world to furnish society with children having well-developed characters. Men and women who will come upon the stage of action with firm principles will be fitted to stand unsullied amid the moral pollution of this corrupt age. Every true Christian will have control of his appetite and passions. Unless he is free from the bondage and slavery of appetite, he cannot be a true obedient servant of Christ. It is the indulgence of appetite and passion which makes the truth of none effect upon the heart. It is impossible for the spirit and power of the truth to sanctify a man, soul, body, and spirit when he is controlled by appetite and passion. So I tell you, when you read this, it really makes your blood curdle. But anyway, let's have some discussion on it. And of course, the appetite is only one part of it. But the question that was put in was they want to talk about a child's physical development, health, diet, and so forth. And this gives us a springboard. Pardon? In Testimony Treasures, it was volume 1, page 422, 423. And in Child Guidance, it's page 103 to 105. Of course, there's oodles of other places that this is talked about. But anyway, what else can we talk about on physical development?
Actually, it's rather an interesting thing that there are so many, many research projects that have been done in recent years attesting to the very, very disastrous effect of improper dietary habits, inadequate nutrition, that in reality, of course, in a test or controlled clinical test, there have been many tests that have been demonstrated completely that rats fed an inadequate diet naturally will drink alcohol in place of drinking water. And they put them in a cage and they put a vial of alcohol and water, a supply, that if they have an inadequate diet, they will automatically go to the alcohol and drink alcohol. If they have an adequate diet, they will leave the alcohol alone and drink water.
Tell about Dr. Noyes, what Dr. Noyes just told you on this subject.
I was talking just a few days ago. Dr. Noyes, about a couple of years ago, when we had Dr. Weber up here, caught a vision of the importance of adequate diet and all of this sort of thing, and he has been just voluminously reading on the subject ever since. And just about a couple of weeks ago at our elders meeting, he was so bubbling over with it that he came in and he said, "I've got something I've got to tell you." So he had just, out of the American Medical Journal, just read a report from the Massachusetts Institute of Health, which is the Ivy League of this category of work. And in this Ivy League Institute, a research project over the past 5 years has been conducted with protein. Now, the first thing that they did was to, their objective was to test the sexual behavior of animals and man with high or low protein diets. And they discovered that the sexual desires, the sexual activity of both animals and man was greatly increased with high protein diets. With low protein diets, the sexual drives were way down.
And didn't they do the difference?
There's nothing abnormal about it, but they were way down. Then they went farther on this, and they actually took the protein of vegetables, that is, vegetarian protein, versus animal protein. And the contrast was greatly increased.
Just like Mrs. White said.
The animal protein, those who were eating animal protein, had a sexual drive built in that was just simply there constantly. Then they even went to the point, and this is what really shocked Dr. Noyes, that they even went to the point where they took the protein from cheese, eggs, butter, milk, and this sort of thing, the dairy products, versus the plain vegetarian protein, and they had the same contrast. The children and adults and the animals that were feeding on this kind of protein had sexual, not only sexual drives that were far out of proportion, but they had misbehaviors.
Abnormalities
in their sexual drives. And they had none in the specimens that were fed a vegetarian, plain vegetarian diet.
100 years ago, Mrs. White.
Now, Mrs. White said this was true 100 years ago. Nobody believed her.
I was amused the other day on the radio. They were talking about consumption of eggs has fallen way down because of the price rise of eggs, and that the egg industry is going to launch a big advertising campaign, and this is going to be what they're going to advertise.
Sex.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. White already told us that.
Oh, yeah. This is true.
Doesn't exercise come in here somewhere?
Oh, yes, we've only touched one thing. I don't know why we always talk on food. There's a 7 facets of the health program.
Does your child, we're asking if it's for the child's well-being, okay?
For the child's well-being. Yeah. They need exercise, water. Our child needs water. They need, lots of water to drink to keep the tissues, the tissues of the body and the whole system flush from the inside. They need fresh air, sunshine. We're going to cover that all Sabbath afternoon.
But you see, well, the thing is, the only reason we're talking about diet here, diet supplies the building blocks. Diet supplies the building blocks. Exercise determines the ability of the body, one portion, water along with it, and sunshine and fresh air. These all determine the ability of the body to use these proper building blocks. That's what it's all about.
We're gonna spend the whole
but
time
on it. If the building blocks are not supplied, you can have all the exercise you want.
But you know what?
And if you have poor diet, it's not going to be nearly as effective.
I understand the diet now pretty well, but the exercise will let my little girl. I can't even hardly get her sleep at night, and I don't know whether it's that she's sitting all day in school or what it is.
Let her run around the block 6 times before
jog
she goes
with her.
To bed.
When you
to
do, when you do your mile, when you jog your mile, take her with you. Well, it's time you start then. I thought I'd torture you a little bit, Blue. But that's what I do with my dog.
No,
my
child dog. Or adult will stay awake if they're tired. And if we're not tired...
She must not be tired then.
All right.
Probably doesn't get enough physical exercise.
Well,
she probably doesn't get enough physical exercise.
This is what I was wondering. Mm-hmm. So I have to jog with her, huh?
Got to start. Okay, let's take on another question. Oh,
certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly, that'll exhaust you in an That's awful good. Big hurry.
Okay.
You before her.
Next.
My jaw.
Okay, next question. The next question is, they want to discuss a child's mental development. How? And I want to read 2 or 3 things before we discuss it. Because this is also can also be connected with with our healthful living. However, I think one facet I might mention before I read this, I'm a great believer in starting to read to children when they're like 3 months old, maybe. I think if we start this and read good things to our children, that we do a tremendous service to them for their mental development of their mental powers, and that's one thing. But now let me read what, and also conversation with little children. Some mothers, I think, don't catch the point. They think that babies are to be baby talked to up till they're 3 or 4 years old, still talking baby talk. I know mothers who practice conversing with their children just like with adults. And I tell you, if a mother will read to her child and converse with them on almost an adult level in some respects, it's amazing what it does to the mental powers. Now listen to what Mrs. White says about the mind. You need clear, energetic minds in order to appreciate the exalted character of the truth, to value the atonement, and to place the right estimate upon eternal things. If you pursue a wrong course and indulge in wrong habits of eating, and thereby weaken the intellectual powers, you will not place that high estimate upon salvation and eternal life, which will inspire you to conform your life to the life of Christ, and so forth. Let's see another one on page 48 here. Oh, these are just so good. Anything that lessens physical strength enfeebles the mind and makes it less capable of discriminating between right and wrong. We become less capable of choosing the good and have less strength of will to do that which we know to be right. The misuse of our physical power shortens the period of time in which our lives can be used to the glory of God. All right, page 59. Oh, here now. All are required to do what they can to preserve healthy bodies and sound minds. If they will gratify a gross appetite and by so doing blunt their sensibilities and becloud their perceptive faculties so that they cannot appreciate the exalted character of God or delight in the study of His Word, they may be assured that God will not accept their unworthy offering any sooner than that of Cain. God requires them to cleanse themselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit. And then I don't want to take too long on this, but let's see now.
May I read something while you're looking then, just a moment?
Okay. Yeah.
She did that to me several times. Fond and indulgent parents, we have none of those here, will sympathize with their children because they fancy their lessons are too great a task, and that their close application to study is ruining their poor health. True. It is not advisable to crowd the minds of the young with too many and too difficult studies, but, parents, have you looked no deeper into this matter than merely to adopt the idea suggested by your children? Have you not given too ready credence to the apparent reason for their indisposition? It becomes parents and guardians to look beneath the surface of the cause for the cause. Now notice, the minds of some children are so weakened that they have but one half or one third of the brilliance of intellect that they might have had they been virtuous and pure.
That's right.
They have thrown it away in self-abuse.
That's right.
Now don't look at me and tell me that I'm a crackpot on this. But I know one thing, and you know it too, that this kind of thing is a hush-hush proposition most of the time. And boys and girls began to be involved in this kind of thing, and much of the vital force of the child is lost.
In the mind.
And the mind affected. She says that one-third to one-half of the brilliance of intellect can be lost with this kind of thing. Now, I know there are many people who will accept the falderal of psychiatrists and psychologists on this who say that it doesn't have any effect on the mind. That's because these men simply do not know, because God gave this message. And this message is true.
We had relatives over the weekend, last weekend, and so I can't tell you the reference that they used, but they said in regards to television, the average American child, by the time he reaches the age of 5, will have watched more hours of TV than all of the years of their
education.
Correct.
Think of it.
And then went on to explain that children at this early age cannot distinguish the difference between fantasy and
reality.
and so everything becomes reality. But because of the fantasy element, and because of even real life situations on TV that are not pertinent to them, they immediately erase this from their mind, and this seems to be a habit, so that anything that appears is
correct.
Memory is,
In child guidance here, Mrs. White speaks of some specific cases where children have been allowed to read fictitious stories. Of course, they didn't have television then, so she didn't write about that. But if she had had it, she would have written a whole volumes on the subject, I'm sure. But where children have been allowed to read fairy tales and this sort of thing, and that actually this warped and twisted their mental capacity to the point where they could not, in reality, straighten out the truth from fantasy, as Ms. Zegley is talking about. They just couldn't segregate it, couldn't straighten it out.
You know, the last, not the last review, but the review just before that had an article on television that was just tremendous. I have a whole file here on, you know, that's come from all kinds of good sources on television. That doesn't even seem to me it's hardly worth even talking about. I mean, it's just...
No, but it has everything to do with the mental development.
Well, that's what I mean. We know that it's absolutely... Like my husband said the other day, the best thing to do would be to take a hammer to it. I mean, as far as our children, if we want our children to grow up pure-minded and...
A good name for it is an idiot box.
Is this damage completely irreparable?
Not sure does.
I don't think that there's any damage that is irreparable if we are sincere and honest and will attempt to, by God's pattern, correct it. But if we don't, it certainly is.
I don't think that there's anything better for our mentality than a memorization of the scripture.
Okay.
My husband had a roommate who was preparing for medicine, and he said he's suddenly realizing that...
Clean up his mind for
chapter after chapter, book after book in the New Testament, and that was the best way to keep it. And I don't even thought this same thing true.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see how readily our small children memorize,
take the opportunity. That's right.
HMS Richards' mother, when she was past 80 years of age, was told that she was going to lose her mind. And Elder Richards told me this story himself, and he said that when he came through from the west coast going east, he visited his mother, and she told him that this is the report the physicians had given her, and she had made up her mind that while she still had her mind, she was going to memorize the scriptures. So she started memorizing the New Testament, and when she was 90-some, and he told me this at that time, when she was past 90 years of age, she knew every word of the New Testament. And she had the keenest mind that you could imagine, and he stopped by at that time and he said, "Mother, how's your New Testament?" She said, "Well, I'm a little rusty in 2 Peter."
Okay, one more statement on the mind. The controlling power of appetite will prove the ruin of thousands, when if they had conquered on this point, they would have had moral power to gain the victory over every other temptation of Satan. And as we near the close of time, Satan's temptation to indulge appetite will be more powerful and more difficult to overcome, all in this, you know, context of what it does to the mind. So I don't know whether we've covered that. Of course, like my husband said, this subject of... Pardon?
Appetite's the key.
And this subject of masturbation that my husband... When you read what Mrs. White says about this, I tell you, and we've had some experience when we worked with youth, you know, in the summer camps and so on, we've had experience with some of these youth that just heart-sickening, large, you know, kids in college and academy that just absolutely were just wrecks from this terrible, pernicious habit. And I hate to talk about it. I mean, it sounds like a... Well, anyway, I don't hate to talk about it either, except that maybe it can be embarrassing at times to talk about. But I know this, that I had read so much in Mrs. White about this, that when I had children, I was so conscious of this, and I was so determined that my children would not fall into this habit. And I think we need to think, okay, how can we help it? How can we keep them from it? And I had a few methods that I use to be sure and assure myself, you know, that my children were not, because it usually starts in babyhood. Children start when they're very young to, you know, carry this on. And if we don't help them and don't, you know, they don't get rid of it, it's going to be very fixed by the time they're, you know, school age and older.
Isn't the mental hospital, I mean, the hospital full of people that have gone through this and their minds are all shot?
Well,
even children,
I have heard that too.
I don't know, I've never been there, but
I haven't spent much time there either, but I'll tell you, here's what I did. When my children were little, I felt like bedtime, nap time and bedtime would be the logical time to carry this on, because there's a natural embarrassment and self-consciousness of the children not wanting to be seen, you know, by their mamas and their papas or anybody else doing this. And so when my children were just tiny, because I'd read so much and I was so, you know, fearful that this could happen, that when I'd put them to bed for at night, I would always have a toy of some kind that they liked, like a stuffed animal or something, and of course never said a word. We never talked about this, because anything you really rave and talk about like this, they're going to do it. And so I would put the teddy bear in their arms, and I'd put their arms around the teddy, and I'd say, now hug teddy real tight, keep him warm, because if you don't hug him tight, he'll get cold. And I'd not put the covers up any higher than here, and here's this teddy being hugged up here. And I'd leave the bedroom, it sounds ridiculous, like I had a phobia on the subject, but I'd leave the bedroom door ajar, and every little while I'd check, I'd just peek in. Is the teddy bear still being hugged? Is the, you know, the arm still out from under the covers? And then at nap time, the same way. I felt like that was very helpful. And then, of course, we did try to practice the health message, which I think does help to control this. And I think if a parent ever finds their child engaged in this, we might ought to be mighty careful how we handle it. Because if we just pounce on them like it's the worst crime under the sun, and worse than anything else they ever did, it becomes attractive. You know, sometimes these things become almost attractive if we make such a production about it. So I think it's something we really need to think about, and that's another reason why I felt like when my children were little, I want to know what they're doing all the time and who they're with. Therefore, at no time ever did I ever allow my children ever to stay all night with another child. The spirit of prophecy tells us we oughtn't to do this. And I didn't invite children to stay all night with our house. Once in a while, I took care of somebody's children, and so I had to have them. But they didn't sleep in the bed with my children, or even in the bedroom, if I could help it. And I know at times we got into awkward positions where people would really almost be offended because I wouldn't let my children stay all night. But I'm not about to let my children stay all night and not know what's going into their heads. I wasn't half as worried about whether they broke off their arms or their necks or whatever as I was what went in their heads. I was terribly concerned about this. And so we lived in the country by choice in pretty humble circumstances because I wanted my children to be where I knew what they were doing all the time. And if they ever played with any other children when they were little, it was children who came to our house, and I watched them. I saw what they were doing, not like a, you know, a watchbird and making them miserable, but I knew what was going on.
Not like a hawk, it was just like a vulture.
Yeah, I was right there. And if I wasn't, my husband was. We both felt this was an extremely important thing to guard our children's minds and keep them pure. And kids who are practicing this vice are eager to get other kids doing it. And so that's one reason it is so dangerous for our children to be playing with children and we don't know what's going on.
I've read this myself.
I don't think that isn't masturbation.
Well, no.
It's just investigating the body.
Is it or is it?
I think it is. Depends on. Now, if they've already got the habit, it is. But I think most any little child who has a wet diaper on, they're a little uncomfortable. When you go to change the diaper, the natural thing is for them to feel their anatomy. But I feel like that if we make a big, oh, naughty, naughty, then it's going to become attractive. And so I think what I used to do when I would see one of my children, they were just babies, you know, in the diaper stage, when they would start to do that, well, I would give them something to hold. I'd give them a little toy, or I'd detract them some way to something else without making any production about this at all. And I don't know if that's the way, but it worked.
Well, yeah, the thing that I always think about is, do they put their hands down it because it feels good, or do they put... You know, or are they invested, you know?
Of course, it depends on how much is going on, how much they're doing it. I think a child, there's a natural investigation that wouldn't be a very prolonged thing. I think also, we knew a girl, a woman, who had adopted a little girl, who had this habit. She was by now 10 years old. Just had it, just terrible. And they went to the doctor and talked to their doctor about it, and their doctor said one of the, which is very reasonable, one way to help this more than anything else was just the utmost cleanliness, to be absolutely positive that her clothing, her underclothing was changed every day, that she was bathed every day, maybe even twice a day, that the bed was kept immaculately, the sheets were just sparkling clean. There's something about just the utmost cleanliness and sweet perfume or powder and this, you know, like babies, Johnson baby powder or something, that there's something about this that has the effect of wanting to have a pure mind along with the pure, clean anatomy. And anyway, this is what they practiced with this little girl. He said that's the best thing they could possibly do for her, and also to be sure what's going on when she went to bed, you know, to either lie down with her until she went to sleep, because she already had the habit. She was a child 10 years old. And that was what he recommended, which I think is excellent. I mean, with little children, if we keep them as immaculately clean as possible, they're not going to be irritated, so that they have this inclination to do this because of some physical irritation. And anyway, this does certainly affect the mental powers of a child or an adult. Who,
what you feed him can cause him to be irritated.
Well, yes, that's true, too.
Because
there's so much involved in it.
If I give a lot of sugar or meats or anything like this, she has that problem, the irritation.
Mm-hmm. So we need to be careful of that. Okay.
Lots of water helps.
And drink enormous quantities of water.
To
you know what? It needs to be a game. You need to have a little game of this. Now, when we get up in the morning, we drink almost a quart of water ourselves. And when our grandchildren used to come when they were tiny, they'd get up in the morning and I'd say, down the stairs we go. We all marched to the kitchen. It was just, everybody did it. We'd go in there they didn't like it. Oh! Just hurry up and do it. It's all over. And before you know it, they had drunk quite a little bit of water.
They get drunkard.
And several times during the day, we did this. We just, now it's water drinking time. We all have a big water drinking spree. And it can, if you make fun of it and make, you know, make it
this
a fun thing.
This is a vitally important part of health.
That's right.
Living.
Water.
And the easiest time to drink it is the first thing in the morning.
To drink some of it.
Get up early.
Once you get used to this, we do this also with the family, and once you get used to it, you actually want it. I mean,
you can't do it.
How long has it been since we can we have a drink of water now, and this comes up.
I drink more than a quart anymore in the morning. I actually have been drinking more than a quart before I eat my breakfast, which is, you know, a long time before I eat my breakfast. But, and if I didn't, I'd feel like I was...
Actually, you get used to it. Your body gets used to it to the point where if you do not drink first thing in the morning, through the day you feel sluggish. It's
okay.
A fact. You just feel sluggish.
Okay, Christian.
Bossa, you had your
excuse
hand
me,
up.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
My daughter just came up about tasting water.
But most children
don't
hate
believe
water.
That.
Well,
that's
she probably,
absolutely foolish.
Well, she doesn't like it, but neither does anybody else. Well, how do you get them to do anything?
Well, you can't just open her mouth and pour it down.
No, but you don't force. I think it's like all these other things. It's a fun
appetite.
Thing. It's a fun
appetite
thing.
Is a habit.
It's a fun thing.
Appetite is as educatable as your brain. Because it is controlled by the brain.
I didn't like water. I hated it.
Why do children, you know, just naturally like sugars? Sweets.
Well, and the same with eating. They don't, my children didn't
eat
what
they
like.
They don't naturally. A baby will crinkle their nose the first time they ever taste sweet just as much as they taste sour. They just, you know. This is a fact. The first time they ever do it, you don't remember it, but this is a fact. When our children were little tiny, we never gave them any sweets of any kind. Never a taste of it. And then the first time they ever tasted sweets, their noses went, you know.
Well, I wish I'd have never started it.
But this is a
fact. My daughter was almost three.
And doctors will tell you this is an absolute fact.
But
any, it's because it's strange. That's why in some parts of the world, there are the most horrible things to eat, and they love them.
Because they learn to.
Go over in the South Pacific and watch them eat poi. Did you ever taste any of this stuff? It's the most tasteless, gooey mess of stuff that you can imagine. And they love it. They think it's just as good as ice cream. They have great big poi feasts.
Okay, let's get on water. How's Vasi going to get her kids to drink water? I think, but I don't know. What do you think?
All right.
All right, Luther has it.
Well, this is education, like he said. It's going to be consistency, and it's going to be a graduating amount, starting with a small
That's
amount.
Right.
Each time
and fun.
Increasing it only a teaspoon or two full of the
And a fun thing.
And have it, at our house, we call it, okay, time for medicine.
Yeah.
And everybody
yeah.
hangs up around, and everybody puts the medicine down the hatch.
Fun thing.
I'd like to ask one question. If your child's going to do all this, what's a good time to get them up if they have to be ready to leave at 8? I mean, you give them up at 7, 6:30, 6.
Well, you know, every home is different, Lou. Everybody has different things to do. Every household has a different program. You know, you'd have to work it into what works. She shouldn't be drinking water. You know, a half hour before meals is the last water that should be drunk. I mean, actually, an hour before a meal would be the ideal time.
Well,
the very
half
first,
hours are right.
Half hours are right.
Well, she's at 7:30, she should drink water.
But she should, at the age
stomach,
that she is, at the age that your little girl is, she should be having private devotions in the morning. She should have a little time every morning before she ever leaves the room to have her little time for little prayer time and little, you know, and along with her, these other little habits.
I have worship with her before she goes to school.
You should have that too.
Every little child should have their private devotions. That's the lifelong habit you want to form. Drink her water and all these little things.
Mrs. Ziegler had an answer on this water business.
Oh, I don't know that it's an answer, but my oldest boy is 3 now, and I have allowed them to have bottles occasionally in the morning. I'd rather have them be drinking the water than just going without the water.
Yeah.
However, I have found that little toy pitchers
and
their own teacups.
We did that.
Or occasionally we will even use food colors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to do it very often, but occasionally all they
pink water.
Hard. Oh, purple water.
Oh, purple water.
Should you ever have a glass of ink?
Wanda's got an idea.
No, I don't. I have a question. With it, it's time for medicine. Now, our little girl, medicine is a very pleasant experience. And she'll eat anything if it's medicine. And it's kind of worrying.
You don't want to be a hypochondriac, in other words, huh?
Yeah, I mean, medicine business.
The only medicine they know is water.
You didn't, myself.
You have to understand our own household. We virtually use no medicine at all.
That's the way we don't either.
In our home, medicine means anything that's good for you. And it's a joke.
Yeah.
And it lasts.
Like jogging is medicine, water is medicine.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is at our house.
There is a couple other tips that you'll learn as you learn to drink water, and that is if the child has a little trouble in swallowing water, like if it's we use hot water first thing in the
morning. We do too.
If it's lukewarm, it's terrible.
Yeah.
If it's too hot, it won't go down. So you want to take a little care in having the right temperature.
That's true.
And then the throat will take it much better if the chin is elevated.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go down just, but if you try to put it down like this. So these tips help.
That's right. You know, a little bottle, like a grape juice bottle, a small grape juice bottle. My kids used to, or my grandchildren thought that was really fun to hulk down this, you know, doesn't taste any different. Devasi. She's got a defense.
Only it was a problem because my son found a pot bottle. And he and Annette were always at the thing with that pot bottle.
Well,
they were drinking water all over the floor, and they were drinking water all over the cupboards, and they got everywhere but in their mouth.
It's better to get in some of it anyway. Okay, one more question here. Maybe we can finish them for tonight. Let's see now. Number 5. I think we've covered this already. As parents, do we...